Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Come play again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Thursday's football show here on Off the Ball. Nathan with you for the next hour or so. And a huge 15 minutes ahead for Dundalk. They continue to lead KI by 2-1 at the Aviva Stadium. 13 minutes left. Will O'Callaghan is there for us. Will, much happened since KI got that goal back?
KI have been very decent since they got the goal back, Nathan, and it wouldn't be a League of Ireland team in Europe, would it, without some scares late on in the game. We all thought, you know, when Dundalk got that second goal early in the second half from Daniel Cleary, that it was going to be a case of them just following on from where they were, keeping the ball, calming things down, but they've retreated back into their shell, and it's been all KI really in the last 20 minutes or so. Richie deserved the goal they got in the 66th minute. It eventually broke to the Norwegian midfield Oli Erik Mitchkigen, and he took a shot from the edge of the Dundalk box. It hit Cleary on the shin as it went through, which then meant that Gary Rogers just couldn't get across. And, you know, a couple of minutes before that, Dundalk had to clear a couple of balls off their line. Now, Dundalk are in here on the break. The ball is going to break across to Dundalk. This is a chance to make it three. And Dundalk have gone 3-1 up, Nathan.
All right.
Fantastic moment for
Every
Daniel
time we
Kelly.
Come over, we get a goal.
Send it up perfectly. Keep coming back to me. Dan Kelly, it was the ball on the break. KI had pushed everybody up. Eventually, Dundalk were able to break the ball in midfield from a long ball that was pushed forward. Dave McMillan drew a couple of defenders out. Not the best defending from KI, admittedly. And Daniel Kelly, who was just on, over on the right-hand side, the ball is played across to him. I think KI are looking to see if this one was offside. But Daniel Kelly breaks through. Goalkeeper comes out. Very smart finish with his left foot into the net. And if this goal stands, it's going to put Dundalk in a remarkably strong position to qualify. 11 minutes to go. Very smart finish from Dan Kelly. He was only on a few minutes, Nathan. Himself and McMillan had been thrown on, with Dundalk making the decision to take Patrick Coopan off, who looked a frustrated figure. He had a part in both goals before that, but looked really frustrated just before he went off. Got booked, could maybe have been sent off. Nasty enough looking tackle. They then made the decision to bring McMillan on, and they took off Kolovic and brought on Daniel Kelly. The goal has been given. So Dundalk lead by 3-1 here now against KI, and I would imagine that that's going to ease the nerves of Dundalk supporters who've probably been watching through their fingers for the last 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, very, very tight, but Daniel Kelly finished that brilliantly, and Dundalk surely now have done enough to reach the group stage of the Europa League. They lead KI by 3-1, 10 minutes remaining. Lots more to come from Will O'Callaghan and from Brian Kerr as well, who will join us at about 9:30 to give his thoughts on that game. Elsewhere in the Europa League, remember all these final round qualifiers, the draw for the group stage will take place tomorrow. Looks as though Dundalk will be in it. Celtic will be in it. They beat Sarajevo by a goal to nil. Odson Edward with a late winner for Celtic in Bosnia. Rangers 2-0 up at home against Galatasaray now. Second half goals from Scott Arfield and James Tavernier. That game with 25 minutes remaining. And Spurs just started the second half against Maccabi Haifa. They lead 4-1. First half goals from Harry Kane, Lucas Moura, and a brace from Giovanni Lo Celso. And in the League Cup, the Carabao Cup, still scoreless between Liverpool and Arsenal. There's always goals. It was 5-5 when they met in the League Cup last season, but scoreless after 62 minutes at Anfield. Elsewhere, Stoke through to the quarterfinals. They beat Aston Villa by 0-0. And Brentford 3-0 winners against Fulham. And Scott Parker, albeit just the League Cup, is going to be under massive pressure, conceding huge amounts of goals and simply cannot buy one at the other end. The draw for that takes place in the next little while. We'll bring it to you if it's done before 10 o'clock. So that's all the live football for tonight. On Sunday, we have a live doubleheader, as always, on Off the Ball. We will have Arsenal against Sheffield United at 2 o'clock, followed by Manchester United against Spurs. So big Sunday ahead. But let's get to our first guest, because Padraig Amond has been waiting patiently. Padraig, how are you keeping?
Not too bad. Good evening.
We're keeping a close eye on Dundalk as well, because this is a very big night for a League of Ireland side. They'd be just the third League of Ireland side to reach the group stage of Europa League, following on from, well, themselves a couple of years ago and Shamrock Rovers at the almost a decade ago. Now, do you keep a close eye on what's going on in the league?
Yeah, I always keep an eye out for the results, especially the Shamrock Rovers results. You know, and but look, it'll be great to see Dundalk get through to the playoff or to the Europa League group stages tonight, because it's important for the league back home to showcase what players and how talented they all are. And I think to bring that extra money in as well is going to be really key for them.
You say back home, you're 32 now, you're still with Newport County in League Two. Is it going to be back home sometime soon? Do you see yourself returning to Ireland to play football?
Well, I've got another year and a half left on my contract here, so
let's start a bit of transfer speculation, Patrick.
Yeah, no, not anytime soon. No, look, I'm really enjoying it over here. Things going really well for me, especially since I joined Newport. It's been a brilliant three years so far, and like I said, I've got another year and a half, just under 2 years left. So hopefully it'll be another successful couple of seasons as well.
We want to have a chat to you about where Newport are as a League Two club, because we hear so many stories coming out of the financial crisis that's facing the game at lower league level, and that the lack of supporters returning. Nobody knows what's coming down the track. But before we get to that, like, maybe this is a good example of where the issues are. Tuesday night, Newcastle, big, big tie for a club of Newport size. You got to play in it. What was it like? What was the difference in standard? Because you went very close to beating them.
We were devastated at the end. We almost had the game won twice, to be 1-0 ahead so late on and concede. To be fair, it was a great finish, and then to be, you know, up on in the penalties. It's disappointing to lose. You know, but we put a really, really good show together. You know, throughout the whole competition, because we beat Swansea comprehensively in the first round, then Cambridge, it was another League Two team. And then in the last round, Watford, again, that was comprehensive. So, you know, we totally deserved to be where we were. And it's just a pity that we couldn't hold on yesterday, you know, because it would have been a great opportunity. Well, it was a great opportunity for us to get to the last day of a National Cup competition. And, you know, again, next round would have been on TV again. And it would have been great for the club for the financial aspect of it, especially with no supporters at the minute. And I think, look, that was massive as well last night. And very, very briefly walking off the pitch last night, I just happened to be walking off beside Steve Bruce, and he basically turned around and said, thank God that there was no supporters there tonight, because he didn't think that they would have got back into it if there were. And, you know, just with the pressure that was on Newcastle at the time, you know, the pressure that is on Steve Bruce as well, I suppose. They're quite a demanding bunch of people up in the northeast. You know, so probably didn't help us, but I think the bigger picture for us was financially we lost out quite a bit last night and throughout this competition, because we would have had a full house against Swansea with a big local derby, and then we probably would have had near enough a full house against Watford in the last round as well.
You probably got a few quid at least, because the fact it was on television, even if it ended up being a sort of strange early start yesterday against Newcastle. Like, when you're talking about those television games, and you've had quite a few of them over the last couple of seasons, when you think back to the FA Cup run as well, do you get a different buzz on those days?
Not really, no. Like, to be honest with you, it's no different to a normal league game. You know, the only thing that we would see a little bit different is there's just around the tunnel, there's usually quite, you know, a few more TV personnel, you know. But then on a Saturday, it would just be, you know, not supporters, like people who work in the community,
yeah,
around the club and other teams.
All the family at home were watching last night, though.
Oh yeah, like you have all them watching, but there's no pressure there. I think I could do terrible and they'd still tell me I was brilliant. So, you know, so it's just, look, it's great for, I think, the bigger picture for the club with all the TV games and we go on to in a minute, probably with the COVID restrictions and what's been happening recently. Those FA Cup runs have been very, very important to the club's surviving, basically. You know, we've had a lot of TV. I think I've played more on TV since I joined Newport than I probably did in my whole career put together before that. you know, and each one of those games is substantial money coming into the club. Like last night, I think it was worth 125,000. You know, obviously we would have made more money if there was supporters there, but at the end of it, there's no prize money in the League Cup until the semi-final. I think the winners of the League Cup only get 100 grand. So 125,000 is really important for our club at this moment in time. And it just gives us that little bit of breathing space, I suppose, and helps out because we don't budget for cup competitions. So everything that comes in is a bonus.
Just before we get more into that financial side then, just purely on the footballing side, last night, that Newcastle side that started, we covered their game on Sunday against Spurs. Like, a lot of those players played again last night. It wasn't a completely changed team. There was five or six of the same players, and like the players who are coming in are the standard of Andy Carroll. When you are going up against a team of Newcastle's calibre, how comfortable do you feel, and how different is it from the week in, week out League Two experience? What are the things those players have that you're not seeing every week in League Two?
I think they're just the thought process is just that little bit quicker. They see the pass before, you know, no matter what level you go. If you watch junior football, they'd probably say the same about us. Our thought process is a small bit quicker than what theirs is. You know, we've got some very, very good talented players. But the big thing about those games is they're free shots for you. There's no pressure on you. The only ones that expect you to do anything are the ones that are in our own dressing room. And we fully believed last night that we were going to get a result. And look, if you look back on it, we've drawn one momentum and got beaten on penalties, and we've led for, you know, 84, 85 minutes of the game. And that's the disappointing thing. And it's, again, it goes back to when we've had all those games previously and we've been successful in them, it just gives us that confidence going in to play against the likes of Newcastle. And it was probably the worst draw Newcastle could have asked for, especially, you know, again, going back to how demanding their supporters are, the pressure that's on those players is massive, and they know that. Well, basically, it showed last night when Shelby scored the equaliser. He's shushing the journalist in the stand. It was the journalist in the stands. He was
right.
He was shushing because that's who've been criticising them quite a bit recently. So he wasn't. I think everyone's been saying he's been going around shushing the crowd, but there's no one at it. But it was actually aimed at the journalists up in the stand.
And games like that, like, are you swapping jerseys afterwards? Like, are you looking to get a memento of the occasion?
Well, it was just a bunch of jerseys just threw into the dressing room. I don't really go around asking for jerseys during a game. I did last night at the corner. One of the corners, and then nearly scored from a header. But that was just purely, it was Callum Wilson was marking me, but it was purely just to put him off for 3-4 seconds. I asked him, do you mind swapping shirts after the game? Just as our player was running up to take the corner, and he just started answering me, and I just made a run. So that's kind of the only, I was only doing it to, if he said yeah and give it to me afterwards, fair enough, but I wasn't too bothered about it, to be honest with you. I'm just this more disappointed I missed the header after getting that one up on him.
Yeah, yeah. That's genius.
Well, it wasn't really because it didn't work.
Well, it almost did. It almost did.
It almost worked. It was almost genius.
You obviously, when you think back to the cup run from a couple of years ago when you scored all those brilliant goals and you end up playing against Manchester City and you beat Middlesbrough along the way, you beat Leicester along the way, you seem to be able to perform against these teams when they come into town. I know it's not week in, week out league football and they maybe have their eye off the ball and it's a shot to nothing for you, but what is it about that group that you can produce that sort of performance on those big occasions that maybe it's not there week in, week out?
Probably just the consistency levels, and that's probably why, you know, at the moment we're playing in League Two. I think those bigger games, well, the games from previous years, the pitch has always been quite an issue for us because we share with two rugby sides. And there are times we play up a Saturday, the Dragons will play up a Friday night, and then Newport Rugby Club will play up a Sunday. And depending on what the weather was like, if it's been a weekend of torrential rain, the following week, obviously the pitch is going to be quite poor. So we've always been quite good at doing the ugly side of the game and using the conditions to our advantage, playing the pitch. We obviously utilise the long throw that we have. And it just, I think the close confinements of Rodney Parade as a ground and the dressing rooms as well. Like the dressing rooms, I don't know how the rugby lads fit in it, because we struggle with 11, you know. But, you know, last night was quite different, because the dressing rooms, because of social distance, and Newcastle were out in a marquee out the back, so there was quite, you know, space for them and all of that. But the pitch is quite good at the minute. One of the rugby teams is not there this year, right. So we've tried to change our style of football this season, because we know that the pitch might hold on for quite a bit longer this year. Because there's no point, you know, deciding at the beginning of the season whether we're going to play a total football, and then come December or come November, when the pitch gets terrible and you're struggling to play on it. Probably the only ones that could play on it at the time were Man City.
Yeah.
They were all right. But yeah, so I think we just up our game for them. The supporters obviously get behind us. It's a free opportunity, and yeah, we've nothing to lose. And when you have nothing to lose, you know, you can give everything. And it is good exposure for the players as well, being on TV. But the big thing for us is to try and maybe turn that into a week in, week out thing.
Dundalk still 3-1 up. They're into injury time. There's about 4 minutes left. We've got sidetracked, probably talking more actually about the football than we had intended to, because it was to be more about the financial situation at the moment. What's your understanding of it? Are you having a lot of conversations with those in charge of the club as to what not having supporters means in terms of fulfilling contracts, in terms of even fulfilling the season? Because there is always this catastrophic side of it that's put forward by those in charge of English football, that unless money comes in, unless there's financial support from the government or from the Premier League, that the game is going to go under and clubs are going to go under. Are those conversations happening?
Well, we've had conversations with the club throughout the summer, and, you know, again, going back to those cup runs have been very, very important to us. The amount of money the club has made over that period of time, you know, even last year we probably didn't have our best cup run, but we still ended up on TV, I think, 3 or 4 times, with getting West Ham early in the League Cup, and then getting to the AFL Trophy semi-final, that was on TV as well. So they have kind of not put us in a good position, but put us in a better position than a lot of teams. I think in the last couple of days, there has been a lot of, obviously, conversation amongst the lads themselves. You know, not worry is the wrong word, but it was just curiosity to see what was going to happen, because you are hearing that of the Premier League giving money and stuff. But I think the minds have kind of not been put at ease in the last couple of days. But the government they've said that they're going to give a bailout package to the National League clubs and the conference clubs. So that kind of gives you a little bit more confidence that something might happen with the Premier League as well. And I think it's important. Look, you're not looking for, you know, to get money off clubs just to go spend stupidly. You're looking to keep everything the way it is, because if you look at all the players that have come up through the Football League and that are in the Premier League and in the, you know, playing for big clubs at the minute, and just Dean Henderson's an example of that. A couple of years ago, he went out on loan to Grimsby. Now he's vying for number one spot with David De Gea at United, and he's vying for English number one. So players like that will get lost in the system if there isn't money put towards to help the clubs, because it's disappointing to see what's happened with Macclesfield in the last kind of 2 weeks. You know, they were a first club to kind of go. And now I know there's been issues beforehand. That's not just a COVID issue. This is more of a problem that's been going on a couple of years, of mismanagement maybe. But the supporters are the ones who lose out on that.
Yeah. So are you concerned at all? Are you worried about? I know you say you've 18 months left in the contract. Are you worried about what the next few months look like?
I can only go off what's happening with us. We've been tested quite a lot. With the whole club, probably once a week since we've gone back, and we've not had one positive test yet. So we're doing everything right on our side of it, to try and make sure that, you know, we're giving ourselves the best opportunity to, one, keep our families healthy and keep ourselves healthy, and two, keep everyone else's friends and families in the same boat, and we're not passing anything away to you know, in case someone did get it. It's probably something that, you know, you're kind of hopeful that it doesn't get to that stage, and you kind of don't want to go down that road of thinking what will happen. You know, you can only kind of, if you start getting too worried about it, that side, maybe it might affect everything else and the football terms. Whereas I suppose you kind of just have to keep going until you hear something, or until something does happen, because if you get too, like I said, if you get too bogged down in it, you know, it might affect you on the pitch, and it might never come to that situation.
Yeah, it's a good positive way of looking at it. Pádraig, it's great to talk to you as always. Always good to check in. Hopefully things keep working out well and you start getting a few goals at Newport, and hopefully there's a run in the playoffs this season. We'll check in with you in a few months' time.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Pádraig Amann there. You can catch that on the OTB Sports app if you missed it. But let's go to the Aviva Stadium, because Dundalk are in the money and they are in the Europa League group stage. Will O'Callaghan.
They are, Nathan Murphy. They're celebrating in the rain on the Aviva Stadium pitch currently. Dundalk qualifying with a 3-1 victory against KY here behind closed doors at the National Stadium here at Lansdowne Road. Dundalk qualifying, as you mentioned, for the Europa League group stage for the first time since 2016. Sean Murray, Daniel Cleary and Daniel Kelly goals have helped the Lily Whites to overcome the champions of the Faroe Islands. Dundalk made the breakthrough in the 32nd minute. It was a cross from Sean Hoare from deep on the right-hand side, flicked forward by Patrick Hooban to pick out a late run into the box from Sean Murray to head them in front. The League of Ireland champions then doubled their lead early in the second half, a goal that the away keeper Christian Ejohansson will probably have nightmares about. He flapped to the corner when under no pressure whatsoever. The ball eventually smashed home from close range by Daniel Cleary. The visitors though regrouped after that second goal for Dundalk. They got a goal back in the 66th minute when Ole Eric Michigan's shot was deflected by Cleary. The ball just beat the outstretched Gary Rogers. KI then were on top in the game. Patrick Johansson had a decent chance, so did Jakob Anderson, who had the ball cleared off the line by Brian Gartland. But Dundalk sealed the win 11 minutes from time on the break. Eventually substitute Daniel Kelly getting onto the run, he held his line and was just onside, and he slotted home smartly at the near post. Filippo Giovangioli's team are just the third team ever from the League of Ireland to reach the group stages of this competition, and they're set for a financial windfall, as you said, Nathan, in excess of €3 million, a guaranteed 2.9, and then they'll get money for every game they participate in too. They can look forward to tomorrow's draw, which will be at noon in Switzerland, where Celtic, Spurs and Arsenal are among their potential opponents.
Yeah, it's a heck of an achievement for our mate Filippo, who had never managed a senior football team until a month ago, and is now leading Dundalk into the Europa League group stage. What are you seeing down below you at the empty Aviva Stadium?
Well, Dundalk have destroyed their lily white shirts for a start. They all decided to do a Jurgen Klinsmann style group celebration and slid across the wet pitch here at the Aviva Stadium. Just remarkable scenes. I mean, Shane Keegan, another good friend of Off the Ball, who is, you know, effectively their coach on the sideline because he holds the UEFA licence to be able to manage them here in the Europa League. The Leishman can look forward now to leading them into the Europa League and being on the sideline. Filippo Giovanvoli did come down from the stands quite a bit in the second half. You could see he was quite emotional, particularly when KI got the goal back and it was 2-1 after 66 minutes. But Dundalk's players are just kind of celebrating. It's funny, you have to kind of create your own atmosphere in this stadium when there's no fans here. And despite the fact that there's no fans, they decided to give a show for the cameras, and they're getting inside now. KI, understandably, were very disappointed, and they were throwing their water bottles to the ground. I think it was just that kind of weight of history that was on them, because last year they won their first Faroe Islands title in some 20 seasons. It qualified them for this tournament eventually. They got a walkover against Bratislava in the Champions League, eventually beaten by Young Boys. Then they got that victory against Dinamo Tbilisi, and I'm sure they were feeling, Nathan, that they could dream about getting into the group stages of the Europa League and making a bit of history by being the first team from the Faroe Islands to ever do so. But realistically, with the exception of probably a 20-minute spell, they'll probably be quite disappointed with how they played in the first half.
Yeah, and Dundalk have made a bit of history tonight as well. The first Irish team to win three knockout games in a single European season. So while I'm sure people will point to the job that Vinnie Perth did last year in leading them to the league title, and that Stephen Kenny did pre that, there was a job to be done for Giovanioli when he came in here to get these players to regroup in what's been a shambolic season off the pitch that has ended up being reflected on the pitch. So this is quite miraculous that they've ended up in this stage.
Yeah, like, if we're going to be honest here, Nathan, when they were knocked out the Champions League qualifiers and they hadn't looked good in the league in a couple of weeks before that, really they hadn't fired since the restart, you thought probably this was a big job to turn it around in a 40-day period to try and win a couple of games in the Europa League qualifiers to get into a playoff and then to win tonight to qualify. I think, you know, whatever about, say, some very small tactical changes they've made, mentioned before we started, they've probably switched from a 4-2-3-1 to more of a conventional conventional 4-3-3 just in terms of their approach. But definitely this has been about the, you know, getting confidence back into the players. You know, they won their game in the FAI Cup to start, won a couple of league games. You can probably write off the 10 changes from last weekend against Shamrock Rovers. They have got their feeling back. And you look at some of the veteran players who were really important for them tonight, like Brian Gartland, like Gary Rogers. These players have helped them now to qualify for the Europa League again. And yeah, I think they've probably, most of them, earned themselves new contracts if Peak Six are looking at the situation. And it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, Filippo was saying to us yesterday, Filippo wants to be in charge next season. And given that he's qualified them for the Europa League, which I'm sure when the American owners came into Dundalk, that was the aim, to try and get into European competition with all the financial benefits that are attached to it. It'll be very difficult not to give him the job now.
Yeah, here, you go talk to your good friend Filippo. If you can get him before the end of the show, we'll have him on. We'll have him on for a couple of minutes and have a quick chat with him. Just for the Dundalk fans who are listening in, obviously, unfortunately, you're not in all likelihood going to be able to go to any of these matches, though UEFA have said today they are open to supporters returning if the various different countries will allow it. So who knows what happens over the next few months. But Dundalk will be in pot four tomorrow of that draw for the Europa League. Just to give you an example of the other sides that are there, in pot three, you're going to have Feyenoord and Hoffenheim in there. The likes of Real Sociedad still involved as well. Dinamo Zagreb, Leicester City are going to be in pot two. And then you have the top seeds, who are the likes of Arsenal, Tottenham, Roma, Napoli, Benfica, Bayer Leverkusen, Celtic may well be in pot one. You could have Rangers as well. So that's the calibre of opponent that Dundalk can look forward to drawing tomorrow when that is made. But they are through. They have won by 3-1 tonight. And we're going to chat a bit more about it with Brian Kerr in just a moment.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
Welcome back to the football show. Dundalk through to the group stage of the Europa League. They have beaten KI Klaksvík by 3-1 at the Aviva Stadium. 2 second-half goals from Daniel Cleary, crucial as Dundalk get back into the group stage. There's lots of Europa League qualifiers happening tonight. The draw tomorrow at midday. Celtic will be in it. They beat Sarajevo 1-0. Odson Edwards scored a second-half winner for Celtic. Rangers, well, they're just hanging on now at home against Galatasaray. 2-1 up into the final minute of that game at Ibrox. But Spurs comfortably through, 6-2 up against Maccabi Haifa. There's still 15 minutes to go at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Harry Kane with a hat-trick, 2 for Giovanni Lo Celso and 1 for Lucas Moura as well. It's obviously a busy week in the Carabao Cup, another busy week in the Carabao Cup. Still scoreless between Liverpool and Arsenal into the last couple of moments. Stoke 1-0 up against Aston Villa and Brentford 3-0 up against Fulham. Brian Kerr is standing by. Evening, Brian.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. That's a heck of an achievement for Dundalk.
Yes. Yeah. You know, look, it has to be said, Nathan, they got the handy side of the draw all round. If you were to believe in advance that you could get through by beating the team from Andorra, Moldova and the Faroes to get through to the group stages, you'd say that is very unlikely to happen, that it work out that way. But, you know, it's still an excellent achievement for an Irish team to get through to group stages, and we should all celebrate that. I'd be blunt about it now, Nathan. I wouldn't fancy Dundalk's chances of getting many points in the group based on what I saw tonight.
Yeah, let's hold off on that for a moment, because I think that is the next level. We'll start thinking about tomorrow's draw and actually where are Dundalk really compared to the last 2-3 years, to go and acquit themselves to the best of their ability, as you say, in these huge games that are coming down the track. On tonight's game, KI Klaksvík got themselves back into it in the second half. Were Dundalk a far superior side?
I didn't think they were far superior. I thought it took Dundalk 25 minutes to get going in the match. I thought they made it into a bit of a rough and tumble match, Nathan, in the early, the first quarter of the game. They failed to get the ball down and play with any real constructive pattern of play. I didn't think Greg Slog had gotten the ball. I thought they got Chris Shields was badly missed, and I didn't see Sean Murray in the match until he scored the goal, the headed goal. There wasn't enough of Patrick McElhinney on the ball. The full backs didn't involve themselves in the play. Now maybe they were having a look at Cowie, as we'd have called him when I was in the Faroes, Cowie Klaksvík. They were having a look at them, and they were sitting off and waiting. But I thought it took them a long time to start showing a real bit of control and a pattern of play, that they began to look like they were better than the Faroes team. And then they had a spell just leading up to the goal for a couple of minutes where they moved the ball around much better, and they passed it and they shifted it from side to side. And eventually, Sean Howard's ball into the box. Patrick Hogan got an excellent header. He did well to hold Eldmar Farrow off, nod the ball down. And Murray got in ahead of the goalkeeper, Johansson. The goalkeeper's all been the problem in the Faroes. I had contact from someone from Dundalk, asked me this week, what did I think of Klaksvík? And I said, well, the goalkeeper will be a problem if you put him under pressure. And I was proved right. Their goalkeeper was dreadful. But, you know, then Dundalk took a bit of control and they got a hold of it early in the second half to get another... Look, it was a fortunate enough goal. The goalkeeper comes out with a corner and misses his punch, doesn't get to it, and it breaks the clear. He sticks it in the net. Then they sat on the lead, which is fair enough in European football. They sat on it a little bit, but didn't sit on it with any great control. And they got away with a few things. Then they conceded the goal. There's helter-skelter for a few minutes, and Daniel Kelly gets on to McMillan's pass on the counter-attack and took his goal very, very well. But then there's still a lot of helter-skelter stuff near the end of the game. I just didn't think it was a very convincing performance. I thought it was way short of the control that Dundalk showed a few years back, when the midfield was Stevie O'Donnell, Robbie Benson and Chris Shields, and Dane Massey and Gannon as the full-back. Daryl Horgan out on the left, Mountney on the right, and McMillan through the middle. I thought it was much more controlled performances. Maybe we'll see that in the group stages, but I thought it was a patchy performance. They did enough to win the game, but the opposition weren't any great shapes. They were very direct, played off the big man up front, the big Norwegian lad, Mitz Kogan, who played well in the game and gave them a lot of trouble.
As you say, Andorra, Moldova, and then the Faroe Islands, and they sort of scraped through all three of them in the end without being hugely impressive. And Filippo Giovannoli's come into a difficult situation. There's obviously a lot going on off the pitch in Dundalk, and there was a lot going on it this season as well. They were nowhere near where they've been over the last couple of years. They decide to change manager. He has the connections. He's done nothing wrong, but he finds himself managing a senior team for the first time. Was there anything you saw tonight or over the last couple of European matches that he's doing differently, that a style of play that he's bringing in then is different to what Vinnie Perth was doing for the last 18 months?
Well, I didn't see anything dramatic. I mean, I saw the game in Andorra. I only saw bits and scraps of that, and it looked like that Dundalk had good control in that match. I think Celje, the Slovenian team, were a better quality altogether, and Dundalk, it was the errors at the back that cost them. Gary Rogers and Brian Gartland's mix-up early in the match, or in the first half, caused the first goal, and then late on there were more defensive mix-up, but they were of a slightly better quality, I would have said. I see it dramatically different. No, I can't say I did, but remember, this squad of players was put together, I would say, by League of Ireland standards, quite expensively, with the idea that there was pressure on to get through qualifying rounds in the Champions League or group stages in the Europa League. That's why, as I understand it, that's why Peach Six bought into Dundalk. They bought Dundalk in order to, they felt that it would be a lot of income from European football on a regular basis in the group stages. And now they're there. And now they will have that income. And when that income comes, I will be very interested to see, do they invest in the facilities of a stadium in Dundalk or improve that stadium to some degree? That stadium in Dundalk, in Oriel Park, is an embarrassment at the moment in terms of, even at League of Ireland level, it's dreadful, really. And given that they've been so successful over so many years, the fact that it hasn't improved at all is fairly... I wouldn't say it's scandalous, but it's very poor, Nathan. And really, these people who are in charge of Dundalk now need to take a grip, tell the supporters where they're going, what the future is for the stadium or development of the stadium or something, because those facilities are an embarrassment compared to the stadiums we see around Europe, even in the smaller countries around Europe. Even you see the stadium that the team played in Andorra is actually a better stadium. But so, you know, these are things for Dundalk for the future. Now there'll be money in the bank, or there will be money coming into the bank, and there'll be an opportunity there for them to do it. But the squad that they had, they built a squad that was with the intention of not just, you know, winning the League of Ireland again, which they're obviously not going to now this year, but competing well in Europe. And they've got there by fortunate means, I'd say, to end up getting the Faroes team in the playoff stage. When you look across the fixtures in Europe tonight, I would say they were the two lowest teams in the coefficient. Yeah. And also, and I would also say, Nathan, the quality of the football in the first half of the match matched that. And if that's harsh, I'm prepared to stick with that opinion. I thought it was fairly rough and tumble, I'd say, stuff a lot of the first half, until just before the spell when Dundalk scored a goal.
Here, and listen, you're more than entitled to that opinion. It's interesting your comments about the stadium, because like a victory like this, you can never just savour it for what it is for Dundalk. It's what does it mean for Irish football? What does it mean for the League of Ireland? And I know in the middle of COVID, when we're talking about money coming into Irish football and questions are asked about where Dundalk spent their money, they would say, well, they've done a lot behind the scenes in terms of new gym equipment and treating their players better, and that they haven't been handed a stadium by the council like certain other clubs maybe, is the way Dundalk would look at it. But would you have a concern now that actually they go and spend this, and is that a concern, or actually would that be beneficial for the league as well if they spend a good chunk of this money on players from inside and outside the league and bring the standard up, or actually is the best thing for the League of Ireland that Dundalk invest this in facilities?
I think they need to get a balance on that, and they need to have a plan. They need to decide an action plan in combination with the local, with the council, And with Dundalk. I see every reason why Dundalk should get a good chunk of money from state resources, from government funds or local authority funds. They brought a lot of joy and a lot of credibility to the town over the last number of years. They played some great football and brought some great nights to anyone in the vicinity, in the general area of Dundalk, who would have loved the football they played and the style they played with. So, you know, I think they're entitled to expect help from the authorities, and not just their own resources, but they've also got to put their own money where their mouth is as well, and not just invest the money in the team and around the team, and doing the gym is okay. The gym is useful for the players, but if you're hoping to have 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people at your matches on a regular basis, you need to provide modern facilities and suitable facilities. The facilities for the away supporters in Dundalk is scandalous. They're standing out in the rain. They're sitting out in the rain up in one corner of the ground with a dearth of facilities. It's not even last century, two centuries ago stuff, I'd say. And their own supporters aren't particularly well catered for either. But look, tonight is maybe more, it's about they've achieved something that everyone in Irish football will be happy about, that we'll have an interest in the Europa League group stages for only the third time, that we'll be watching those matches. It's a pity that we won't have supporters into them. It was a big decision for Dundalk to go and play in the Aviva Stadium tonight, and it's a pity that there was no one there to cheer them on and to enjoy that occasion. But that's how it is, and it's probably likely how it's going to be in the group stages too.
Yeah, you'd have to assume that all their home matches will probably be at the Aviva once again, and we went through some of the teams they could play, from even Feyenoord potentially being a pot three team up to the likes of an Arsenal, Tottenham, Leicester City, Celtic Rangers, all in that draw tomorrow as well. how they fare then, it's going to be a cramped end to the League of Ireland season, but like we think of the last time Dundalk qualified for the Europa League and acquitted themselves so well, and it's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons that Stephen Kenny is now the Ireland manager. They beat Maccabee Tel Aviv, they draw with AZ Alkmaar, and they run Zenit very close twice, and in the other two games that they lost, they were right there in all of those matches. From what you've seen tonight, and we don't know the draw, you don't sound overly confident that we can get anywhere near to that level again from this current Dundalk?
Well, not the team that put out on the field tonight. I feel the team that played in the field tonight is a long way short of that team I mentioned earlier on when they were at, when they were at their best, which they showed in those group stages. I mean, I was at all those games, bar the one in Israel. But they had, I think, individually and collectively were a better side then. I mean, you look at the position in the league table at the moment, and you've mentioned that it'll be a very cramped programme towards the end of the season and the group stage start. I think they showed last weekend against Shamrock Rovers what their interest was in the league. Their interest in the league was that they didn't pick their team to play against Shamrock Rovers in what was a very important game for Shamrock Rovers and some of the other teams in the league in relation to their finishing positions and making the top four and so on. I think their ambition now is just to make the top four and to probably try to get some points in the group stages and make some money from the points garnered, which, you know, maybe that's the right approach. Yeah. But you would think, you would like to think that they would be competitive in every game they play in the league also. I mean, in my opinion, the league game at Shamrock Rovers should have been postponed the other night. It shouldn't have been played. The Dogs should have been given the opportunity to rest the players fully for tonight's game. Now, as it happened, they just decided to rest the players anyway by not playing them. But it meant they put out what was more or less the second team against Shamrock Rovers in the league. Now, is that fair to the other sides in the table who are in competition against each other for places near the top and places near the bottom? I didn't think so, but the answer was to call the game off.
Yeah, well, that's, you're right, like, that's not the Dundalk's fault. They have to prioritise tonight's match.
For sure. No, it wasn't, and I think the game should have been off. But look, it'll be interesting to see how they combine the two of playing the group games and playing the group games in the Europa League and the remaining games in the League of Ireland.
Yeah, Filippo Giovannioli, their manager, has just been in his press conference saying he wasn't happy with the performance tonight either, but obviously they got the job done. And do we have to take that into account with tonight's performance as well, that this is a huge game still for all of these players? And for once, it's a rarity, a game of this importance for an Irish club. They are overwhelming favourites to go and win it. So there was a lot of pressure on the players tonight. Maybe that was a factor as well?
Yeah, I think in the first half there was signs of nervousness. It certainly wasn't a sign of experience and confidence in the first half. There was a lot of misplaced passes and a bit of ginging up the pitch at times. It wasn't a composure that I would have associated with the dog. But I think Chris Shields has a big influence on that. I mean, it might sound slightly odd to say one player should make a big difference, but he has been such a key man for them over the years in terms of that holding position, controlling the tempo of the game, ensuring that there's players around them to pass the ball to and build up the play. And I think they missed him badly. But, you know, I look at the yeah, I don't know how far away Sean Gannon. I mean, why he didn't play tonight? Dave Massey had an operation. Obviously, he's not available. I mean, they're such key players in the dog style over the years. But look, at the manager and everyone else around it would just be delighted that they made it and they got through. I'm looking at it in the bigger picture and saying, are they likely to get points in the group stages? You know, against better teams, that like the Faroes League, there'll be only, I think, maybe two teams lower ranked than the Faroes League in the whole of Europe. KI Klaksvik, it's a remote place in the Faroe Islands. It's, by my reckoning, when I was driving there, it was about five islands away, you know. And even to get players to go there from the Tórshavn, well, they would have had to think about it, unless Cowie were paying a lot more than the clubs in Tórshavn, like Habay and B36. So you know, they weren't, they beat Dynamo Tbilisi 6-1. We saw how they did it, beat them with a lot of set pieces, balls into ball. And you could see tonight how they could make goals and create goals, but you know, quite limited defensively, and were found out. But look, I'm delighted for Dundalk. I feel sorry for Vinnie Pear tonight that he wasn't involved in it.
Yeah.
I think he was very, very harshly treated. And, you know, some of the suggestions that were being made to him, as I understand it, in advance of some of the games prior to them removing him, were outlandish and ridiculous, and were obviously the opinions of non-football people that hadn't a clue what they were talking about. So they dispensed with him on the basis of a European defeat, and the ball has bounced for them well since then. They've got handy opposition, and they've come through it, and they're in the group stages, and we look forward to seeing the draw tomorrow and Dundalk's big matches in the Europa League group stages.
Yeah, we'll keep a very close eye on that. I can't believe you didn't back up your line you were saying at the weekend that Klaksvík was essentially the Cork of the Faroe Islands, that they fancied themselves
bit. No, what I'd say to you was Klaksvík is the fish capital of Europe now. Fish factories in Klaksvík are booming, and it's going really well up there at the moment. And obviously their team win the league last year. They're a few points off Hobbe, as they're called, HB, at the moment, and they may not win the league again this year, but you know, they were down the second division a few years ago, so they've come back very well. And Mitchell Thomason is a very good coach, a good manager, and he got the best out of what he had tonight. They just hadn't got enough. But it's a small place. A very small group to pick from. Interesting that there's a few foreign players in the squad tonight, but not many of them in the starting team, the big Norwegian. I think that was about Pavlovic, the centre-half as well. That was about it.
You've been back to the Faroe Islands lately?
No. Last time I was there was when Trapattoni's team played there.
Okay.
I'd like to go back.
We'd like to go anywhere right now, Brian.
Pardon? It won't be going now soon, that's for sure.
No.
You can't go anywhere now.
Jeez.
Stubbs, can't go anywhere.
Even an old 6 a.m. flight to go to watch Southampton against Burnley or something, we take it on a Sunday morning at this stage.
For sure.
We wouldn't even complain about it. Just a couple of results. Arsenal have beaten Liverpool on penalties in the Carabao Cup in the last couple of minutes, finished scoreless after 90 minutes. Harry Wilson missed the crucial penalty for Liverpool. Joe Willock put Arsenal through to the draw, which takes place shortly for the quarterfinal. Stoke and Brentford also through today. And in the Europa League, so with Dundalk we know through, Celtic beat Sarajevo 1-0, Rangers beat Galatasaray 2-1, and Spurs 7-2 winners against Maccabi Haifa. Three of them for Harry Kane, two of them for Giovanni Lo Celso, one for Lucas Moura, and one a penalty kick in the final minute for one Dele Alli, who came off the bench for Tottenham in that one. So they're in that draw as well tomorrow. You're going to be doing Spurs on Sunday, Brian, in one of our live match commentaries against Manchester United. We've seen quite a bit of them already in our live commentary games here in Off the Ball so far this season. Is it slowly but surely coming together for Mourinho? They were obviously impressive and should have won well at the weekend until the controversy against Newcastle.
Well, they got, it was a bit of a disaster for them losing the penalty late on. They should have been out of sight and won the game well. Newcastle were poor on the day, unadventurous, and created nothing until they put Andy Carroll on and bashed a few balls forward. Andy appealed for a couple of penalties before he got the one they eventually got. But, you know, that's the problem when you're only leading 1-0. And we talked about that during the commentary night. And so I think overall, a disappointing start to only have 4 points. Is it coming together for them? I don't know. You look at the team you put out tonight. You put out a very strong team tonight. Nearly his first 11 from what I remember when I had a quick glance at the side during the Dundalk game. That looked like it was nearly his best team. So, you know, that's how seriously he was taking that match to get into the Europa League, because he knows that's a route to the Champions League next year, as other teams have treated it in recent years. Manchester United and Arsenal have had it, used that route to have a go to try and get in. So I think the win on Tuesday was important on penalties against Chelsea. That keeps them going. It keeps them going in two cup competitions. Realistically, in the league, it's hard to see them having enough quality I think they'll struggle to make the top four. And I think this is an insurance that he's doing his best in the cup comp, cutting out relatively strong teams.
That's a big game on Sunday now. If there's a winner for whichever team loses, it's suddenly a really poor start to the season.
Yeah, for sure, because Manchester United's been very mixed start as well. A lot of criticism. The Crystal Palace defeat was a big downer for them, that they were beaten so convincingly. I think they need Manchester United. I think needed even more than Spurs, because the expectancy level is so much higher on them, and so much more pressure on Solskjaer. Mourinho will get away with it if Spurs aren't doing as well. He'll talk himself through it. I think, and with no supporters in the ground, he can play whatever way he likes. In fairness to them, they took the game to Newcastle Sunday and played well, and it was good play. And Højbjerg looked like he was finding a bit of form. The combination in general looked well. Bergwijn, when he came up, and Son wasn't as good as Son, but Son and Kane were really in form. Lucas Moura on the right. I'd be doubtful about the midfield. I'd be doubtful about Winks and Højbjerg, that they're the top quality. Matt Doherty is a bit to do as a fullback and as a defensive, on the defensive side of his game. And we've just wait and see how Reguilón does when he gets in. If he gets in ahead of Davies. Oh, Davies played well at the weekend.
Brian, great stuff as always. We're out of time. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Okay, no problem, Nathan. See you at the weekend. Okay.
Yeah. Brian, back on Sunday for that commentary of Manchester United against Spurs. We got Arsenal, Sheffield United from two as well. And just a bit of news from the FAI. They say they're going to be talking to the government this week about UEFA's announcement that they will allow supporters back into stadium up to a maximum of 30% capacity. So who knows, maybe for that game
football
against Wales,
on off the ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All right, we're almost done for tonight. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on the OTB Sports app. We had John Giles, who was really good at Manchester City. John Small on Ballymun's success and Jerry Connolly's retirement. I spoke to Paul Gammond about Newport and some really interesting insight into playing against Newcastle last night. And just there, Brian Kerr, maybe with a bit of dose of reality for Dundalk supporters. Not that they really wanted tonight of all nights, as they're through to the group stage of the Europa League with a 3-1 win. But really interesting stuff from Brian. As he said, back with that commentary of United against Spurs on Sunday. Get yourself to otbsports.com right now, because there's a really interesting exclusive just gone up. New York GAA escaping the maximum possible punishment for the scenes of a tightly packed stadium at Gaelic Park over the weekend. Head over to otbsports.com right now. You get the full story there. Tomorrow morning, OTB AM, 7:30, Dundalk reaction, Jenny Murphy talking rugby, Phil Tomo Thompson and Phil Egan will be breaking down all the Premier League on TV into must watch, might watch and won't watch. Tomorrow night, we're back at 7:00, reaction to tonight's game. Lorna Fowler on Friday Night Racing. Tom Dunn's up next. Good luck.
Spice. He'll give you a move with guilt like your eyes.